For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
Well, to go forward, we have to look back. So I suppose we start 2024 with a bit of a review and cleanup of 2023. Welcome to All New, All Different, All of the Above, a new version of the old scene. My name is Hank.
Hey, how you doing?
Happy New Year. Statute of limitations says you can say that if you haven't talked to somebody in the new year for roughly a month. So I'm actually kind of sort of out of statute of limitations, but I haven't talked to you yet. So Happy New Year. If you're here, that means you made it through 2023. I say congrats. And let's hand in hand skip to my loo into 2024. What do you say? You can find me on facebook.com/allofthe above radio. You can follow me on Instagram, either Hank, hey, how you doing? Or at Hank Told You So. If you suddenly have money in your pocket that you didn't spend on your kids for the holidays, feel free to send me a donation on thehrt3@gmail.com. With your donation will come more shows. That's a guarantee. Never did do that Patreon thing. Probably should have looked into that once upon a time, but this is in a list of coulda, shoulda, wouldas, All of the Above Radio and All New, All Different, All of the Above have some. It's neither here nor there. And if you were interested in my massage venture, my email is thehelpfulhandsofhenry@gmail.com. I sacked up, and speaking of cleaning up 2023, I sacked up and finally got an email address for my massage business. Got some cards. Tell you what, Canva makes things a heck of a lot easier these days. Once upon a time, Vistaprint was the thing where you would get on there and kind of do a create your own thing. But it was kind of like the Wild West. Canva seems to have taken hundreds, if not thousands, of templates and given you the ability to kind of really actually make something on your own versus trusting somebody to do it for you. Funny enough, the first cards I ever had printed were when I was a bartender all the way back in 2008. And I thought I could get a private party or two or hand it to a female. Because a then really good friend I had, he was a video game designer. And he always kept cards on him. And his line, it was, you could see it coming like Ricky Vaughn throwing a third pitch 99 mile an hour strike in Major League. You could see it coming. We'd be out at Sherlock's for those of you in DFW, you're familiar, in 2007 or... no, we'll call it 2005. Not 2008. We'll say 2005 was when I got my first cards and when I was hanging out with this guy. And so he'd have his hand on his pocket like a crazy man's got, about to reach for his knife. And he'd ask the girl if she liked sushi. Oh, yeah. And you know, either they really liked sushi or they didn't like sushi, but they thought he was attractive enough to just kind of go with it. And he'd pull his card out and say, give me a call if you want to get sushi sometime. So all the way back in 2005, I had this woman named Lisa Kay print me these business cards. And all she did was get on Vince to print. But I paid this broad to probably get cards printed for free. But because she was the artist who designed the cards, I had to pay her. Not with Canva. These cards I got for the Helpful Hands of Henry, my massage business, they're really fun. And they're just from a template, but from left to right, top to bottom, corner to corner, you do your full design. It was pretty badass. And I love the cards. They're really fun. Something else I did in 2023. That's not necessarily why I'm here. I'm not here to tell you about my massage venture. Although, it is a bit of connective tissue. Huh, see what I did there? It's a bit of connective tissue to tell you, or to remind you, that once upon a time, all of the above radio existed on a week-to-week basis every Tuesday on the Fishbowl Radio Network. And the reason that I left all of the above radio and the Fishbowl Radio Network was because I went to massage school. So there will forever be a tie with all of the above radio and massage and all new, all different, because that's why I changed the name, because it wasn't in the studio anymore, it wasn't with music anymore, there was a lot of changes that happened after I left for massage school, but realized that I still like being on the microphone and I still like talking to interesting people on the microphone. And this is a tease for later in the show, but like my buddy Chad Alexander once said, we lose touch with we have a network of friends that some you talk to every day, some you talk to every couple of months, and some you don't see for years, but you still pick it up like it never left. And he described his podcast as a friend that he hadn't talked to in a while that he needed to pick up again. And I like that. That stuck with me. More on that later. So as the shows pile up, as you record, when you're doing something with a little bit of prep and then a lot of live workshopping, you end up having thoughts that kind of expand upon themselves, but you can't necessarily go back and get them in the moment. Every so often, I will record an extra piece to a show and add it on before I send it to you. But a lot of times, I just record the show, send it to you to give you a little something to chew on, and then I'll come back later with a piece to add. Now, that can sometimes be a little bit dangerous because you guys have long forgotten the show or never listened to it. Either way, if it's something you enjoyed the first time, maybe you'll enjoy it a second time. I know people that, on a yearly basis, watch, well, my wife for one, on a yearly basis, she watches You've Got Mail every year, right around the fall. And she watches Elf every Christmas season. And I have a father and son set of friends, they were at my wedding, and every Thanksgiving day they listen to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie. And Lord knows, if you find a book good, you'll read it multiple times. If you find a movie good that isn't a holiday-specific movie, or Groundhog Day, for example, very topical, they'll do that over and over again. So you know what? Maybe you pick up an episode of All New, All Different over and over again, so that you can reconnect these puzzle pieces I give you after the fact. I know I have a few written down. And as we go, we may very well have more to add. But I figure we might as well go all the way back and start with the first note I had. Hold on one second. What I want to make sure I'm doing here is, boy, Spotify, you are killing me. I'll just keep on typing. Okay. And there we go. That's what I was trying to do. I wanted to, don't do it. Well, I wanted to make sure that I caught up with every episode last year, just in case I had a piece I wanted to add to that. And here we are. This is what I wanted. So first of all, oh wow, yeah, and here I am doing a quick look back at some of the shows I did. Oh, some of these are really good. Man, you guys need to mess with these. Some of these are really good. Oh man, there's some good stuff in here, man. Oh, well, yeah, here's another. Okay, well, let's get started, everybody. I'll go back as far as I can think to okay, here we go. All right. I just looked at my phone. I'm taking my sweatshirt off. Taking my sweatshirt off. Starting to get a little warm in here. It's time to have a nice little chat with y'all. So, last year, the first show I did was about Dry January. And it's the third year in a row that my wife has done it. And it was my first. And I followed it 100% letter to the law. I didn't, even at work, whenever new beers came in, I didn't taste anything. Whenever somebody had a cocktail that they were experimenting with, I didn't taste on it. Nothing. Followed it letter to the law last year. Now, this year, and by the way, a really interesting show kind of talking to you about my insecurities and how much faster they are known to come out when I'm drinking versus when I'm not. They're always there. The demons are always there. And like I said in last year's episode about Dry January, the demons are right behind my eyes. They don't ever go anywhere. It's just that if I drink too much, there is a reasonable chance that the demons can be released a little quicker. Or I can misconstrue information that will cause the demons to flare. And that is probably the thing that I think the most, or one of the things I think the most about drinking, if I were to ever stop drinking, that would probably be the main reason why. Is because of just how much quicker the demons can be released, depending on how much I've had. Now, I'm going to sit here and tell you, in no way, shape, or form have I ever made an aggressive move towards anyone I have ever dated while I was drinking. Let's just clear that up. I don't want you guys to sit here and think I've become some type of monster. But what I know is moments that I am embarrassed about the next day more frequently happen if I've had too much. Now, there is, of course, that fine line everybody talks about where when you've had just enough, you have just that tiny bit of effort in you where you don't care if you're on the dance floor. And you're much more liable to stay on the dance floor. Or that conversation that is flowing so beautifully, you feel a little more confident about joining it, but you haven't had too much to the point where your brain is slowing down or you're spitting when you talk. And I will tell you this. I am so glad that I am not in a space where I take a drink and suddenly the world feels better, or I feel better about the world. But I will very quickly tell you, you do definitely feel all of your nerves just kind of take a deep breath and exhale. It's the truth. Now, I was telling my wife this just a few short days ago. What's funny about alcohol and dry January is I am of an age where I can tell you, depending on what I drank, it will dictate how I sleep. And what's funny is I did damp January this year, where if a new beer came into work, I tasted it. If there was a hugely monumental occasion, I would have a drink. It's still a composite. If I were to give myself a letter grade for how I did in terms of damp January, I'm pretty sure I gave myself a solid B. Pretty sure that's what I did. What's funny is that I can tell you how much better, or I can tell you what type of sleep I have depending on what I drank, and it probably won't be great. But I have come to the really terrible realization that I'm of an age where if I don't drink, I still sleep terribly. I don't wake up with a hangover, which is awesome. I don't wake up with a stomach ache or a headache, which is double awesome. But I may still, if I fell asleep at 1:30, I may still wake up at 5:45 and be wide awake until 8 o'clock in the morning with no alcohol. So there is that occasional moment of, what the hell's the point of not? So here's another point of not drinking, by the way. The realest reason I decided to do damp January, not dry January, but damp January, was because I remember hearing one of my bar regulars several years ago, who was in the midst of dry January and does it every year and has done it for a decade, I do believe. He said every year he goes on dry January, he loses 10 pounds. I can't speak to his body physics or any of that, but the idea of that was super enticing to me. So I just thought, oh man, this will be a good reset. I'll, you know, just in case I have developed any level of dependency to it at the end of the night, I'll clear that. Just in case I've developed any level of crutch while at work, I feel like I deserve one at the end of the night, I'll clear that. But maybe my pants will fit just a little bit better. What I forgot to tell myself, the thing that I already knew, and what I forgot to tell myself was, you can't switch out one calorie packing monkey with another. Because yeah, when I drink, I make real dumb decisions about making myself a big fat late night sandwich or a half a bag of potato chips. But if I'm not drinking, I forgot to remind myself that I can't end the night with a brownie four nights a week, or a cookie, or half of a scone. Whoops. So, in this world where I don't make New Year's resolutions, but I make 30-day goals for myself every month, I may very well have to switch out all of the monkeys and say no alcohol and no dessert if I wanted to, if I think I want to do any level of weight loss that doesn't involve hard cardio or a new workout regime. Just kind of saying this out loud to all of you. Not to say for you to hold me to it, but for you to all listen and say, oh yeah, that does make sense, you doofus. So I did Damp January this year, and it did really provide a great reset. It's really good when you can take a little time away from anything. My wife was in the middle of a great effort of dry January. I gave her a solid A, if not an A+. And she also did a phone breakup. It's a book. You can find it. Look it up on Amazon or Audible. How to Break Up With Your Phone, I believe is what it's called. It's a great way to remind us that social media just has a tight grip. How many times a day do you pull up your phone and say, oh, let me get on Instagram and see what the specials are at my favorite restaurant, and 5 minutes later you've forgotten that that's what you were there to do? Or, oh, let me get on Facebook and check in on that Super Bowl party I got invited to. Did I remember to RSVP? And 10 minutes later, you forgot what you were there to do. And so it's good to get away from the things that are holding on to you, whether you've grown dependent or to them, or they've just latched so deep into you that you don't know it's a habit. It's just good to reset your habits every now and then. Oh, damp January. So after the dry January episode last year, I did a 3-part series. It was supposed to be one episode, and boy, did it not become that. It became a slightly heated 3-episode series on how to be a better restaurant and bar guest. And I tell you, it was a lot of fun to do, and I had to not print a retraction, but I had to get on mic and remind you guys that no matter how much we as service industry people say we hate you and want you to die, it's not necessarily true. At first and foremost, we want you, the restaurant guest, not to have sex with a chainsaw or be hung by a jockstrap. But we want you to understand that we are people and we should interact with each other as humans, not as slaves, not as lesser than people, not as the junk on the bottom of your shoe. That's really all I'm trying to say. But from that episode, I can't tell you if it's episode 2 or 3, but I believe I told you to ease off the entitlement. Because I'm sure you have seen it a time or two if you go into a places enough. Somebody at some point gets offended and says, do you have any idea who I am? Or, I know the owner. Or, do you know how much I spend here? Any of those things have been uttered at some point or another by somebody who is offended by the service. And you know what another one is? I'm never coming back here again. Which, by the way, let me remind you, I said this in one of those episodes, and I'll say it again. If you are a person that says, I'm never coming back here, there is a reasonable chance that we don't want you back, and we hoped you left a long time ago. So, that being said, shortly after I put out these episodes, I had this very strange experience. It was a Sunday, and it's a guy who had been coming in with his wife. He's an older guy. He's probably in his upper 60s. He is the epitome of country club jackass. Overweight, gray hair, shirt tucked into his khakis, white tennis shoes, and his wife is as classic upper middle class, 60s, thick glasses, short bob hair, or not bob, just short hair all around. And they normally come in and sit down and eat. So their dining phases are spaced out properly. So he walks in one day, it's a Sunday, and he orders to go. He's never ordered to go before, to my knowledge, and he walked in and ordered it. So he had no idea of the timing of his food. He had never paid attention to it, because usually he's sitting down with his wife, he's having conversation, he's sipping a glass of wine. He doesn't know the timing. And so he orders his food, and he's standing up, and he's pacing, and he finally loses his mind and says, "It's been 22 minutes since I ordered my food. I have never been treated this poorly." I said, "And just to let you know, our average quote time for a to-go order on a non-busy day is 15 minutes. So on a busy Sunday, if a pizza took 22 minutes, if a to-go pizza took 22 minutes, that's right on schedule. It's 100% on schedule." And he said, "Exactly. It's taken 22 minutes. I don't understand what's going on. I've never been treated so poorly here." I said, "Well, sir, I'm so sorry about that. That glass of wine that you're drinking right there, I'll go ahead and cover that. That's comped off for you. I'm so sorry. It shouldn't be much longer." He says, "It's not about that. That's not what I want. I just want my pizza." I said, "Sir, it's almost ready. You've got two tickets in front of you. It's almost ready." And he hauls off and says, "I have never been treated so poorly in this building. I am never coming back." This fat old piece of crap looked me dead in the face and said, "I've never been treated so poorly. I'm never coming back." After I just said to you, "Your wine is paid for. Sir, I'm so sorry. Your pizza is almost on its way." I truthfully, to this day, still don't know what I did to trip him. And then he started coming back in, and it gets better. So it was a Tuesday. I wasn't working that day, but it was a Tuesday. And they got really busy. And during lunch, people are on a time crunch. Okay, fine. But it got real busy. Or, you know what? Let's get rid of the time crunch conversation, and let's just talk about the fact that on Tuesday, we are shorter staffed because there's less need for people. You don't have a food runner. You don't have a host. You have a bartender, a server, and a manager. That's usually all you need. It was a very busy day. The restaurant was full. He obviously did not pay attention to the world around him, because he never does. And apparently hauled off and said a second time, "I don't understand what's going on. This is BS. This service has been terrible. I'm never coming back." And by the way, he comes in probably 3 times a month. Because I watch him walk in every single time, and we all look at each other and say, "Hey, remember the guy who said he's never coming back? He's here again." And while I understand, every last one of us has said something that we didn't mean. Every last one of us has said something that we may have had to take back later. Every last one of us, in the heat of frustration, insecurity, sadness, hurt, anger, fill in the blank, has said something that, had you just taken a couple of deep breaths, you may not have actually said. What I would love to know is how many places are in this fat old asshole's rotation, and how many times he has hauled off and said, "I'm never coming back," and gone back. I wonder if he and his wife have a rotation of 4 restaurants. Has he said, "I'm never coming back," to all 4 of them at some point, and yet he has gone back? And I'll just go ahead and just kind of give you a little extra bit, not related to this guy. Just a quick reminder. Just a super quick reminder, and I wrote this down, but I actually didn't write down what caused me to say it. But I have written down here, in general, watch how you talk to your bartender. Now, obviously watch how you talk to your server, your host, your food runner, your busser. Watch how you talk to all of them. Because you know what? Every last one of us can do something to you during your dining experience that you won't enjoy. I will keep it specific to me as a bartender. I'm not somebody who spits in drinks. That's something that I've heard has happened is people will spit on the head of your beer because it all looks like foam. I've heard it happens. That's not my thing. But what I will do is most definitely short pour. If you paid $12 for a whiskey and Coke, and I'm supposed to pour you a full 2 ounces, you best believe you probably got an ounce and a quarter, maybe even less, and I may have then just topped it off to make it look like I gave you some extra, but really I still gave you less than you actually paid for. So last year I also talked about, and believe me, I could go on and on and on and on about how to be a better bar guest, how to be a better restaurant guest. One thing I can say to you is please make sure you speak clearly your intentions and your wants. Make sure that you say yes or no, or pick your head up from your phone. Most specifically, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, specifically when it comes down to your food going home with you or going in the trash. Please leave no doubt with the person taking care of you that you want the food or don't want your food. It just happened to me yesterday. And boy, it sure did cause me a bit of confusion. And I did the truly otherworldly thing of saying, oh, that's my fault. But it wasn't. I gave my bar guest 2 different chances verbally to tell me whether or not he wanted to take his last bit of pizza to go. And both times he said, A, no, or B, I'm good. And as I was picking up the food, I threw it away right in front of him, took his plate, and walked away. 3 minutes later, he said to me, I wanted that to go. So now I have to tell the kitchen to make another pizza, albeit a slightly smaller size, but that is still dough, sauce, cheese, and meat that is just pissed away into the air in terms of food cost because you didn't put your phone down and speak clearly and say, I would like this to go. Or grab the box that I left next to your food and put it away yourself. Like I said, I could go on for a little while about all of this. I really could, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to move on to the next episode that I had a little bit of cleanup for. Just to remind you, I'm doing a bit of a cleanup on 2023. For those of you who are arriving late, just getting in the car, whatever. So I talked about, on the episode where I talked to you about I did a tribute to Dallas radio legend Russ Martin and rolled it deeply into a conversation about what celebrity deaths would cause me to cry. And ladies and gentlemen, one happened. So I am in a music league. If you're familiar with this app on your phone, you already know. It's very similar to the board game Ox God, where it's basically just a competition where somebody gives you a prompt, you pick a song, and everybody votes on who's got the best song to fit that category. Well, the category was songs that make you cry. And boy, there was a lot of really sad country music songs on that playlist at the end of it all. But the song I picked was the orchestral piece that plays during Tony Stark's funeral. Spoiler alert. For Avengers Endgame. And I watched it on YouTube to figure out the name of the song. So I'm watching it on YouTube, and the scene, cover your ears if you ever at some point feel like you need to finish the Infinity Saga, although I already spoiled it for you. The scene I watched was them setting Tony's heart into the water, and you get the traveling camera of every team or superhero in the MCU during the Infinity Saga. And I teared up when I saw Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther on the screen. If you will remember, several years ago, it may have been the day after he died, I posted an episode about the death of Chadwick Boseman and what he meant to the MCU, to young black kids, to pop culture. He meant a lot for several specific groups of people. He meant a lot. And that day, sitting in the car trying to figure out what song made me cry to submit to Music League, I watched that YouTube clip, and sure as the top of my feet are dark, seeing Chadwick Boseman on the screen from that clip of Avengers Endgame, it sure did. Then what other? Looking over my notes, looking at my episodes here. Oh, and just super duper quick, told you last year at one point or another, there was a coworker that said I reminded him of Mr. Mosby from, I believe it's The Suite Life or Suite Life on Deck or whatever. That guy, he was a 19-year-old kid. He got fired shortly after I recorded that. Not me. I wasn't mad that he called me Mr. Mosby. I went and watched YouTube and thought the guy was actually quite funny. As a person, he's in jail now, but as an actor, very funny. So another thing I talked about, and this one probably could go on a little longer if I wanted to, but I will say, the episode about the different types of love has actually kind of sort of opened up a new understanding for me. It genuinely did kind of crack open doors as to different ways that you can say I love you to somebody. And it's not necessarily cheapening the idea of love. And it's not necessarily cheapening how you feel about yourself or that person. Because before I recorded that show, I kind of had a general feeling of you only say I love you to the people that you really, really feel it. But I really was kind of only running with one definition. By the way, a really funny scene in Arrested Development is when Michael is talking to his brother Job. I think it's about Steve Holt. And Job says, Michael, I'm feeling something I've never felt before. And Michael says, is it possibly love? And Job says, I know what an erection feels like. That could be an Eros, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, recording that show gave me a better understanding that you can say I love you and have it not just mean the love of your mother or the love of your wife or the love of your best friend who saved you when your car was broken down. There is more. and I have done a better job of converting from saying, damn right, anytime somebody says I love you, to actually saying I love you back. It's become a lot easier, I will say. Now, I could still sit here and have an argument and say that people can cheapen the phrase I love you by oversaying it or not meaning it. But I can just as easily say, you know what, maybe they understand that there are 8 different types, and maybe that's what they exhibit. Maybe that's how they feel. So you know what? Which is why I suppose some people say that ridiculous combo phrase of love you, mean it. Love you, mean it. Oh, sweet Jesus. I got a great idea. Maybe you just confine it to people you actually love, even if it's 1 of the 8, versus just saying it to anybody and everybody. Or maybe that's how we perpetuate more love on the planet, is just by saying it. I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's not necessarily answers, just more questions sometimes. That's what we're good at here at All New, All Different, All of the Above. So I had a quick thought about the episode where I talked about being a jack of all trades. Something I totally forgot to bring up is when you are on that dogged pursuit of becoming a master of one versus a jack of all trades master of none, you gotta watch out for getting burnt out. And it was funny, it was almost immediately after I turned off the microphone that I said, wow, I sure did not talk about that. Because I remember I went all up through elementary and high school with a kid named Aaron Colvin, who was a phenomenal pitcher. He was a great, great, great baseball player in general and a really good pitcher. And he got so sick of baseball and everybody telling him how good he was and everybody trying to push him to do seniors and travel and this and that, that not only did he stop pitching, but he stopped playing baseball. He became a pretty good football player and a really good track athlete for our high school. And to the point where the restaurant I work at has been open for 10 years now. And since damn near day one, there has been a family of 4, a son, a daughter, and the parents that have been coming in. And the kid was, I think, 6 at the time. And was already a baseball player. And his dad was talking about, oh, he's so good, he's this, that, whatever. And as the years have rolled on, he started doing travel teams and several different seasons of baseball, not just like he'd play for his high school, but he would also play 22 games for here and 24 games for over there and then go to a camp in Nebraska and so on and so on. And I said, at any point, do you think he's going to feel any level of burnout for this? He says, no, he loves it. He wants more. Okay. Cool. But yeah, there is that thing you have to look out for, is the idea of, in that pursuit to become a master of one trade, not only the thing I talked about during the show of what are you giving up in the process, what are you missing out on, but also are you burning yourself out while you do it? Are you so, have you overconsumed yourself with, let's just stay with being a baseball pitcher. Have you overconsumed yourself with your throwing coach and your back, arm, and shoulder exercises and your pitching camps and your baseball seasons and your ice on your arm? Have you overwhelmed yourself and overdone yourself so much with that that you are now burnt out in this pursuit to become a master of one? Interesting questions to throw out there. So just not too terribly long ago, my wife asked me if there was any game show, she's watching Survivor right now, is there any game show that you think you would compete on? And I said, you know what? I could probably get on an amateur cooking show and accidentally cook something so good that I make it to the second round. Or I could go on a show like Drink Masters or a bartending competition, and maybe if it was 16 people to start, I might get into the top 13 or maybe even 12 before you start getting into people that are doing molecular gastronomy or food pairing or edible garnishes and backdrops. And there is a component of me that, if I, like I told you in the show, if I wanted to become a master of something, it would be either cooking or bartending / mixology, just because those are my two realms. Maybe massage. Maybe. But I would wonder, would I get burnt out on being in the kitchen or doing drink research or learning about different massage, or would I just soak up all the information like a sponge? Don't know. Because like I said in that episode, there's far too many interesting things in the world that I want to be a part of or learn or absorb, so I don't know. If anything changes, we'll talk about it here. Then I talked to you guys about October 7th and how big that of a day that randomly was for me. It's the day that my father died. It's one of my buddy's birthdays. And it's the night that I had to, or that I was summoned to help get a friend to the hospital. And what's crazy is that is such a big day for me, just from those three events. And what hadn't even happened yet was the attack on Israel. So that became a pretty damn big day for a lot of other people, a lot of other countries. A battle that's been going on for, I'm not nearly educated enough in this, but for centuries? Israel versus Palestine? I mean, are we talking centuries? Because I know it's decades. Every decade I've been around, but I think maybe for centuries too. But that's crazy to think that such a big day for me can be such a big day for thousands of others, or such a big day for thousands of others could mean a lot just to me, or something to that effect. But yeah, I recorded that episode and I didn't even mention the attack on Israel. That doesn't necessarily affect me directly, but I have Jewish friends. I have Palestinian friends. And I know that they have had like little kind of quiet moments of, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about being Palestinian right now. Maybe that's kind of a touchy subject. I don't know. I don't have a lot of thoughts on the Matt Shauger episode. If you missed that, it's super appropriate just because I'm recording this near the Super Bowl. And it every year, it's unfortunately, we get further and further away from the 2007 and 2011 New York Giant championship teams. But it's fun every year to see the anniversary videos popping up on Instagram or on the sports shows, because inevitably the question pops up of most miraculous Super Bowl catches or Super Bowl performances or any of that. So it's nice to be reminded of a team that once was. And by the way, if you're an audiobook guy or gal or they, if you're in the mood for a book that is some level of inspirational, super informational, and just like sports, go ahead and check out Earning the Right to Win from Tom Coughlin, the coach of the Giants 2007 and 11 Super Bowl teams. Fantastic book, and I actually bought his second book and have not picked it up yet. In fact, maybe I'll go ahead and check that one out next. I made the foolhardy goal of finishing two audiobooks or listening to 10 hours worth of audiobook material for the month of Feb, And I should probably figure out what I'm going to listen to next. Currently finishing up Tom Vitale's book, In the Weeds, about his time as the lead producer and then director for Anthony Bourdain's television shows. More on that at a much later date. I don't have much to say about the Matt Shauger episode other than I really, really hope I get another one out of him. He was hard to wrangle. That interview was years in the making. It took me several times of emailing him over the years and saying, hey, I would love to have you on my show. And one day he finally said, why haven't I been on your show? And instead of saying, bro, where the hell you been? Did you read an email? I just said, when are you ready? Which, funny enough, does bring me in some level to my point that I started to tease earlier. I'll get there, trust me. So we've gone through a whole bunch of episodes and done some cleanup from all new, all different, all of the above's 2023. And that brings us back to the present. Not too terribly recently. Yeah, wow, okay, all right. In the very, very recent past, or just a couple weeks ago, could have just said that, I was able to sit down and chat with Chad Alexander for his podcast, The Local Bar. For those of you who don't remember, Chad Alexander started doing a podcast just a little bit after me. I have known him since roughly 2006. We were both groomsmen in a wedding, and we became fast friends that weekend, and then started playing fantasy football together, so there was banter back and forth. And the next thing you know, he started calling into my show, and then I started contributing to his. And our relationship was just cool enough that he invited me to his wedding. So, of course, why wouldn't I invite him to mine? So we have been friends from a distance from a while, but we've been brothers in podcasting for almost as long. And it continues to be an honor that I get to be a part of his world, but in this case, most notably a part of his show. He did a phenomenal job of finding that one thing and running with it. He does a great job of highlighting interesting people or positive people or interesting people doing positive things, and me. If you want something uplifting, give it a listen. And I've always said this, my favorite parts of the show sometimes end up being the conversations he has with you before and after. He is the bread, and the guest is the meat on the proverbial podcast sandwich, and it's really cool. All of it is good. But not too long ago, he had me call in again on a really cool concept about reconnecting with your friends, which I teased earlier. And he asked me a question. So I'm bringing this all up because I wanted to do a bit of cleanup on my interview with Chad. Because when you have raw recording like we did, you're not given the time to prepare. And it makes for really good, fun radio, or podcasting in this case. But what I always feel bad about, like I have said throughout the course of this whole show, is that there's things that you miss, or there's things that you could have said that would have been more fitting to the question or more fitting to the topic. And Chad asked me a question that I wanted to go back and get and at least add some color to. He asked me, could I think of a difference between pre-wedding me and the me now? A A great question, by the way. It's a question of how have you grown since before you got married to now? And the answer I gave was good. If you haven't listened yet, I won't tell you to go listen to Chad's show. I suggest you do anyway, but I won't tell you to go listen to it. I will say a big difference between me before engagement and now is that I urge more, or the answer I gave is that I urge more for a peaceful environment as opposed to being right. Which is absolutely true. But the example I gave wasn't the greatest. And the only reason I say it wasn't the greatest is because it's not necessarily accurate to how to create a peaceful environment versus being right. I have a better example, and I thought about this just a couple of days ago. So, if we were purely to go off of the conversation of being right versus a peaceful environment, I'm going to take it away from my wife, per se, and talk about my wedding day. So, there is one moment that will never, ever leave my mind as to being right versus wanting peace. And boy, I was right on the edge of choosing violence that day. It was on my wedding day. The I do's have been exchanged. The kiss has been done. Walking back down the aisle. What the heck is the name of that song? It's not On Our Way Home. It's Two of Us. Something with Amy Mann. Anyway, we've got a drink in our hand, and now it's time for pictures. Let me set the stage for you real quick. It's 99 or it's somewhere between 95 and 99 degrees, just depending on where you stood at the venue in Smithville, Texas. It's hot. We have gone through the walk up, the walk down, the music, the this, the that. It's been fantastic to this point. Now it's time for pictures. And if you have ever been in the midst of a black family wedding, there's probably going to be multiple scenarios in the day that's like herding cats. And really in the lead up process, wrangling a black family for a wedding is like herding cats. And pictures were no different. Now, to the credit of my family, for the most part, they actually snapped to it pretty well. Except for one person. Doesn't matter who, but one person was making it particularly difficult. First, because she was nowhere nearby. Second, because she wanted to get her husband in the shots, but he didn't want to be in the pictures. He really kind of didn't want to be at the wedding anyway. And they actually kind of verbalized that to me a couple weeks before the wedding. That's a whole other story. I don't know that I will ever tell you. You guys are going to have to pull that one out of me because it's kind of a story that burned my muffins. But we're not going to talk about that here. So we had to wrangle her, and then we had to tell her it was okay that her husband was not in the shot because he didn't want to be there anyway. And then we get a couple of pictures with the whole family, and she stops everything and says, wait, I wasn't ready. We need to take more. Knowing full well that we had more shots to take, knowing full well that it wasn't her day to orchestrate, and knowing full well that my wife was already frustrated with how the picture-taking process was going, because she had it organized and everything kind of went kerplooey because not enough people paid attention to the list of shots she wanted to take. Or the list wasn't properly distributed or whatever. In that moment, I could feel everything welling up, and every grown-ass man moment in my body was leading up to that moment where I almost turned and said, it's not your day. We are done with these shots. You can walk away now. I cannot express to you how close that moment was to coming out. And people that know me are probably doubting me a little bit because they've very rarely seen me angry. So let me remind everybody, or tell everybody for the first time. My natural inclination in moments of stress or duress or hurt or this, that, or whatever, if somebody is attacking me, or if I feel like somebody is attacking me directly in some way, my natural inclination is rage. It's flipping tables, it's throwing things, it's yelling. You probably don't know that because I don't let it happen. And I haven't told the story of the first time I let the rage overtake me. I was 13 years old, and countless people have told me, bro, you were 13, let it go. Don't use that as your lesson. Once again, more things we won't talk about here. But the fact of the matter is, I don't like showing that side. I would rather, in my best moments, I would rather reach a mutual understanding or teach or counsel to get to a peaceful scenario. Funny enough, that same person who wasn't ready and needed more shots and was trying to make the day about her. Funny thing. Later on in the wedding proceedings, somebody pulled me aside and told me something else she was offended by and was hoping that I would talk to her and apologize about it. And I had another grown-ass man moment. And see, it's funny how a grown-ass man moment can connect really closely to, do you have any idea how much I paid for this? Those are some of the most entertaining moments in my adult life is when I have had a true concept and understanding of just how much things cost, especially when they are being signed off by me. And that day, as she was telling everybody that she wasn't ready and needed another shot, and then was talking about how she felt like she needed to be given some kind of special treatment for some scenario, I started to think not only about the woman that is now my wife and how much more important she is than this person who's causing a ruckus, I also thought about how much I spent for that day to be about her and me, my wife and me. And I can't express to you just how much I wanted to lose my mind. That is a far better example that I could have given to Chad about a peaceful environment versus being right. I could show you the check stubs. That's an old man phrase. I could show you the credit card statements. In that moment, it's let me just break it down to the easiest of easiest. The moment in the movie Spaceballs where Barf is standing next to Lone Star, spoiler alert, during the wedding, and he says, Bartholomew, and the officiant says, are you the one getting married? No? Then get out of here! It's that simple. If it's not your day, it's not your day. Back off. Stop being you for 1 second and know that it's about someone else. Which brings me to the overall general point. So pre-engagement me, on a much bigger scale, was about me. And I will say this. Pre-engagement me actually stretches back to, we'll go ahead and call it 2013, 2014 or so. I spent a very, very long time. I moved to Texas in 2004. That'll be a different episode to talk about my 20 years I've lived in Texas. But I have been in Texas since 2004, and I was single for a large chunk of it. I lived by myself for a much larger chunk of it. I didn't have to answer to anybody. I paid my own, I for the most part paid my own bills. I didn't have to wake up at any specific time. I didn't have to be anywhere. I didn't have to answer to anybody. And that can create, accidentally, a somewhat selfish vibe to your belief system, to your way of running your life. And ask me that question again of what is the difference between pre-engagement Hank and this current day, one, I am far less selfish and understand that it's not just about me, it's about us. It's about the greater collective, which is why I seek more for coaching and counseling and teaching and a collective understanding. Because you know what? What the hell does me being right mean if I am not advancing the both of us? Whomever the both of us is, if I am not advancing the collective good, whether it's me as, whether it's us as a couple, or me as a group of friends, or me in a workplace, there is no progress being made with one person being right 5 feet ahead while the other person is lagging behind. So if you're not teaching, if you're not counseling, if you're not growing, you're missing the point. That's what I wish I would have said. And that actually started not before I was engaged to my wife. That actually started when I got into a very serious relationship. The relationship I was in before my wife. That's when I started the understanding of it's not just about me anymore. Because, you know, you're with somebody for 2.5 years. At some point or another, you got to realize it ain't just about you. So that was kind of the starting groundwork. Now, I did a lot of those. I had a lot of those realizations out of resent for her because she was kind of a pain in the ass. Well, because we're not together. And so some things I did to shut her up. Some things I did just because it was easy. But it at least laid the groundwork for moments where you understand that it's not about you. Moving forward together is just the better way to go. But having been in a relationship that caused me to want to marry somebody, it kind of adds that extra special thing to it to say, okay, now I want to do this so that we can grow together. It's not just so that she'll shut up. It's that now we can grow together and learn from the process. So that's what I, that if I was going to go with the parallel of peaceful environment versus being right, I would have much quicker, if on the fly, if when I was talking to Chad, I would have much quicker brought up, it's so much more about the greater good and learning together and growing together than just being right. Because if you're right, chances are you now have put somebody in your wrong position. There's no point. There's no point in somebody being wrong just so that you can be right. There's just no point in it. Collective understanding is what we should be going for. And that doesn't mean that somebody won't get hurt along the way. That doesn't mean so, because you know what? If you reach that collective understanding and somewhere in there you figure out that you're wrong, that still sucks. But at least it was presented to you in a way that makes you feel like you still want to keep going. I'm big into that. I'm a big believer into that. So pre-engagement me has learned that it's better to go towards a collective understanding or a collective teaching and go for the less selfish of being right. Now, do I occasionally enjoy being right if it's at work? Eh, sure. But I don't know how much money it puts in my pocket. As Jim Ross once said, you can't buy groceries with potential. You can buy groceries with money, though. I'm far more satisfied by money and or a collective understanding, depending on the situation. Now, if I really wanted to just have a quick rim shot and a mic drop moment when Chad asked me what's the difference between pre-engagement Hank and current day Hank, the answer would have been about 17 and a half pounds. And there is an argument to be had that your body reaches its... Your body, whether you lose weight or gain weight, you kind of get back to a... Your body wants to be in a certain homeostasis, a certain stable place. It wants to be in a certain spot. No matter what you do, you're going to probably end up back near there. I will gladly say, if I'm just going to look at the last 10 years of my life, I'm still roughly 30 pounds lighter than my highest weight. My highest weight was, I want to say it was 2016, when I was 210 pounds. And I was still young enough and doing enough active work to get the weight back down. And then I began dating my now wife, and my physical activity went way up. My stress level went down. So I have still fluctuated in weight, and I feel like the weight I'm at now is probably a more realistic weight for what my body actually wants. You know what really sucks is a wardrobe change. Buying all new stuff to match your current weight, it sucks. It's not the end of the world. But it empties your pockets a little bit, you know? But that would have been my very funny answer, by the way. And there's another little kind of comical moment that I wanted to clean up from the Chad Alexander episode. He talked about the idea of Tinder, and he was a little bit blind to it because he spent a little bit of time on it and found Maria and retired all of that. And I was lucky. We talked just super quick about this. I was lucky enough, if you call it that, that I was still in the Match.com, Yahoo Personals age of online dating where you messaged from your computer and you set up your date and you met. So it was a little more traditional. And then there was the, you just go out to the bar and drink. And if you got in conversation with somebody on the dance floor and made something of that, cool. They were two totally different things. With Tinder and Bumble and whatever, with the geo tracking or whatever the heck it's called, like the way to actually meet somebody in the moment from your phone, I kinda sorta wasn't a part of that. I was on Tinder, I think, for about a month and a half before I got into my serious relationship in 2014. But Chad was kind of surprised about the whole concept because he is such an extrovert and he is such a pound the pavement guy and he is such a thrill of the hunt guy that he was kind of a little bit appalled by the concept that people can just sit at a bar and find them from their phone. First of all, and I got into a little bit of a get off my lawn conversation or a little bit of the these kids today conversation on his show, which I didn't want to do, but I accidentally just kind of started careening down that road. Interaction now matches up with attention spans. People's attention spans are a lot shorter because of the way you can research now. You can pick up your phone and have information with four taps. However many taps of your thumb it takes to type something in, your information is there. It's not the same as Gen X, that's me, or older millennials, that's my wife. Generation Y and Z has information at breakneck speed, and it has caused their attention spans to be breakneck speed. And the other thing that truly ruined interaction, to which I'm so glad that I wasn't a student for either of these things really, was Columbine and the pandemic. Those are two different things that changed how interaction took place. The pandemic, more current and more notable, because now you're at home. And now people are more comfortable at home or less liable to communicate with each other when out. So Chad and I are talking, Chad 46, me 45. We are now talking as two Gen Xers who, him more so than me, were pounding the pavement, quote unquote, like actually hunting on a Friday night to talk to girls. Versus this age of people that are on Tinder or Bumble. There was something that I said that I teased real quick, but I didn't have the information right in front of me. But I said to Chad, and I bet you there's an app where people can find a third person for a threesome. If you would like to be a part of a thruple, the app is called ThreeFun, by the way. I knew it existed. I just had to find it. Now, let me make abundantly clear, everybody. I have not looked at the ThreeFun app for my marriage. But what I do know, just from my occasional Google feed or the audiobook I got done listening to just a couple of weeks ago, Rated X by Maitland Ward, by the way. There are plenty of people in this world that like to spice up their marriage by adding a third. And once upon a time, I repeat, as a Gen Xer, I sat at my computer and chatted with people and set up online dating, but there was also Adult Friend Finder at that point. That was how you could enter yourself as a third. And there was male-female couple seeking men, male-female couple seeking women, men seeking men, women and women seeking women, and men. And it's the old math equation playing itself out when you can play the probabilities game and you run that scale of how many different, like you multiply this one times that one times that one, and to get your number of probability. However many possibilities there could be, Adult Friend Finder was that for Gen Xers and boomers and maybe seniors. I don't know. Yuck. Respect, but yuck. But there is, of course, if there was Adult Friend Finder, there is now going to be ThreeFun. There's going to be something on your phone that is geo-related. You can just, hey, you're just out at a bar, just like, hey, babe, You wanna have somebody do you tonight while I watch? You want me to sit in the Papasan chair and make a sandwich? I'm crisscrossing several references here.
But how's the sandwich?
There is an app for that. Oh, boy. It is amazing how many things that this age of information has brought us. We can be so prosperous and move forward in so many ways, or we can sit absolutely still in so many ways. Whatever you choose, you chose to do it while all of the while all new, all different, all of the above was in the background, and for that I am grateful. Another thing that Chad Alexander said in the episode that I was a part of was, I don't want to say to you guys, it's been too long, I'll be back more frequently. He said he didn't want to say that because he had a lot going on within his family life that he needed to tend to, and he needed to be a part of that. He needed to be present for that. Whatever I had going on in 2023 when I was not recording, I obviously needed to do that. Now, would I like to talk to you guys more? You're damn right I would. So will I make that attempt? You're damn right I will. That's the other thing I said I would do for the month of Feb, was make sure I get two of these recorded and sent out to you. So I got some audiobook listening to do, and I got some more recording to do. So you just stick around and we'll get all of that taken care of, and I'll tell you about it later on after it's done. So we will do this again soon, and soon after that, and soon after that, and soon after that. My name is Hank. This has been all new, all different, all of the above. May there be a next time, I say till next time. And like Chad Alexander once said, in that very same show where he talked to me, call a friend. Call a friend you haven't talked to in a while. It'll do both of you some good.